Anybody have a question? You can ask one. Yeah? Maybe during the Bisap day, you might have many questions in your mind.
Just to clarify one point, this is going back a little bit to the mind-only school. We're doing some revision. So it's regarding the dualistic appearance. In the notes it said there were three types of dualistic appearance, external object, subject-object being different entities, and appearance of conventional phenomena. So I just want to confirm that when dualistic appearance arise, is it that it is any one of these three appearances, or do all the three appearances arise simultaneously at the same time, which means that when we have dualistic appearance, all these three appearances are appearing to the mind at the same time, or is it one of them depending on the karmic imprint?
So any of the three examples that you gave can be posited to be a dualistic appearance. Dualistic appearance need not be all three. So if you think that there must be all three in order to be a dualistic appearance, then why is it? Why? This is the question. This is the question for you guys. So you are satisfied, isn't it? When I just said that it can be just any one of the three in order to be a dualistic appearance. You need not be all three, but you are just satisfied. You just sit there and okay, right? You're okay, right?
So
I said with certainty that In order to be a dualistic appearance, it can be any one of those three that you examples that you brought up, but you need not be all three, isn't it? But you understand the point, you know, why, you know, you are satisfied, right? But you understand the point why, you know, why in order for it to be a dualistic appearance, it doesn't have to be all three, it can be just any of the one.
One is enough. You happy with that?
Why is it that you don't need all three in order for it to be a dualistic appearance? You got all three in the first place, no?
You know the three? What? The three totally different. Doesn't mean one thing. You know the three? Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha?
All dualistic. Of course it's not straightforward, it's not easy. The way to learn, you know, is not to be satisfied and sit there and just accept it. No. That's not going to work. It will never ever work. The way to study is to, you know, whatever that comes up, you must ask why this, why that. You know. The only way to learn is to have a continuous, you know, succession of questions. Why this, that. You know. Then you really get to the point. Otherwise, it's not going to work, yeah.
You need to go back again.
So, what faults would there be if one asserts that all three must be present in order for there to be, or for it to be considered a dualistic appearance? You know? What are the faults?
What are the faults?
Microphone. Microphone. The question that you have to answer is this. What are the faults if you say that in order for it to be a dualistic appearance, in order for there to be dualistic appearance, there has to be those three things that you mentioned earlier? What are the faults?
Yeah, must answer for that. Yeah.
Try, yeah? Okay, so in the mind-only school, it is said that the object and the subject, when you apprehend an object, it comes from the ripening of one karmic imprint, right? So, if Ken Rinpoche has already clarified that dualistic appearance refers to any one of the three types of dualistic appearance, I'm making the assumption then that there is a different karmic imprint for each of those different dualistic appearances. So an individual, whether the dualistic appearance for Mui Ching is, say, appearance as an external object, And my dualistic appearance is appearance of subject and object as different entities. And say, Tek Fong's dualistic appearance is appearance of conventional phenomena. These are because we all have different karmic imprints. So if I say all the three dualistic appearances must come together, that means every time when I apprehend an object, I need three karmic appearances to make that contact, you know? I don't know whether I'm getting my idea across.
But you have three imprints within you, isn't it?
I do have the three imprints within me, but when I'm just seeing the cup, and I'm seeing the cup as an external object, that is one karmic imprint. That's my karmic imprint to see the cup as an external object. Maybe my dualistic appearance is not seeing the cup as separate from me, but my karmic imprint is to see that cup as an external object.
How can it be? Yeah.
I'm just thinking like maybe.
There's subject and object, right?
Yeah, but maybe the main thing that predominates in my mind is, oh, there's a cup. It's a cup really out there, you know? But the thought...
And therefore it's the object and the subject, right?
That thought doesn't come up to me immediately. So I'm just wondering. In fact, my other question to Ken Rinpoche was whether.
External objects, the appearance of external objects is always there because it's really stated very clearly. All sense consciousnesses are necessarily mistaken. Yeah. So, definitely is there, yeah. So, in fact, you basically just said that all three have to be present.
No, that wasn't what I was saying.
But essentially, in meaning it is because there is there's an appearance of external object, right? Therefore, there's also the external of appearance of subject and object as separate, isn't it?
No, but that was my related to my original question. Yeah. I was clarifying with Ken Rinpoche whether arising of dualistic appearance means any one of those three, or it must be all three together. So Ken Rinpoche has already confirmed that for it to qualify as a dualistic appearance, it can be any one of the three.
Okay, you accepted, right?
I took that as confirmed, yeah. Yes.
So, you accepted that, right? Mm. But the question now is, what are the faults if you assert that all three have to be there in order for it to be a dualistic appearance? Because your answer is, because there are three imprints, therefore there are three appearances. So you're saying that there are three appearances, right?
No, my argument was if each of the dualistic appearance...
Yes, not argument. You must answer the question.
So, what are the faults, what are the problems if all three appearances have to be there in order for it to be, for there to be a dualistic appearance?
Come.
Anyone?
Anybody?
You sure?
Yeah.
Try.
Try. Hey, yeah,
try. No. No, that's good. Trying is good. You must try. It doesn't matter.
If,
you must try.
If only one of the appearance is present, and you say that it's not dualistic, that means that even if a person with one of the four would...
What?
Would be considered to have realized emptiness of phenomena.
What do you say?
So if he have... So your question was, why is it if only one of it is present?
No, the question is, what's wrong with saying all three have to be there in order for it to be a dualistic appearance?
Okay, so that implies that if only one of it is there, it is not a dualistic appearance, which is wrong, is it? That means if someone who sees an external object or subject-object as would not be considered to have holding a dualistic view, which is wrong. Because as long as you see subject and object as separate, then you are seeing a self of phenomena. You would not have realized dualistic appearance. Hence, it need not be all three. Any one of it would be present. Let me get it.
I think Lois Lane have to rescue herself. So going back to this point about three types of dualistic appearance, the fallacy.
Okay. Okay.
In the first place, your question was, in order for there to be dualistic appearance, is it all those three things that you mentioned must be present, or just any one of those, right?
Correct.
That was the question, right?
Yeah.
And my answer was, not all. You need not have all three. If there's any one of those, just one of those three appearances, you can posit that to be a dualistic appearance. That was clear, right? That was the answer, right?
Okay, Sukim. Okay. Yeah. So far, yeah. That too, she needs that. You know, you have a lot. Now, some guy, you go there, I'm not. I'm not going to go there.
So now my question is, so what I've said is, you need not have all three appearances in order for you to posit dualistic appearance. Just any one of those three that you mentioned, isn't it? But now my question is, what is the problem? If we say that all three must be present, then you must have all three appearances in order for it to be posited as a dualistic appearance. What's the problem? So is there a need for all three appearances in order for it to be a dualistic appearance?
Can I try?
Yeah. Okay. That's right, anybody. I mean, it's just another way of asking your question, but in order for it to be a dualistic appearance, must there be all three of those three appearances that you mentioned?
Okay. So, this...
Yes or no? Do you need all three appearances in order for it to be posited as a, in order to posit dualistic appearance?
No.
No. Yes or no?
No.
No. Why?
I'm just thinking along these.
So you posit an illustration to show how you need not have all three appearances in order for it to be dualistic appearance. Posit an illustration.
Give example. Then it's bad. Oh, this one doesn't need all three.
An eye consciousness apprehending blue. As an external object. I'm just thinking of this in terms, because this discussion on dualistic appearance comes up in connection
give
with
example now. Sunga yomonga chinshi sa tishi kyapta sugi.
Chinshi sunga ingene.
Yeah.
Give an illustration and explain how you can just have one of those three appearances in order. Posit an illustration that is just one of those three appearances and explain how that is a dualistic appearance. Yeah, you have to explain clearly based on an illustration how you just any one of those three appearances can be a dualistic appearance without the other two.
eye consciousness apprehending blue because it's a direct valid cognizer, realizing the an eye consciousness apprehending blue an eye consciousness apprehending blue as an external object blue.
So what dualistic appearances are there in this?
This is the appearance of blue as an external object. That is the dualistic appearance.
Okay. Of the three, what is not missing? What is missing?
What is missing now is subject and object. Subject and object appearing as different entities. Actually, no. And then appearance of object as a conventional phenomena.
Which is missing, sir?
The other two, lor.
Huh? Which other two? Which other two?
The other two, which is the appearance of subject and object as different entities, and the appearance of the object as a conventional phenomena.
No, there is an appearance of external blue, isn't it?
Yes.
If there is an external, if there is an appearance of external blue, then blue is appearing as something different from the apprehender, isn't it? So it follows, therefore, there is the appearance of an apprehender and apprehended, isn't it?
Yes, that
object
was the
and
point.
Subject.
That was the point you were bringing up earlier.
Yeah, so two yeah. already, yeah?
Two already.
So what's missing?
The conventional phenomena.
Blue does not appear?
Yeah,
to
blue appears.
Consciousness?
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, so does that mean Ken Rinpoche was purposely giving me the wrong answer in the beginning and trying to tell me that dualistic appearance needs to be all three so that we could have this discussion?
No, the answer was correct.
Oh, okay. Then it's back to the drawing board. I'm just thinking along the lines of three karmic imprints, which means that every time you apprehend an object, three karmic imprints must arise at the same time because those three appearances are related to different karmic imprints.
Because you guys accepted what was said earlier, right? You see, what Ken Rinpoche said was, you need not have all three. Just one, any of the one is sufficient to be a dualistic appearance, right? If you accept the answer, therefore you must be able to find an illustration, right? There must be something, just one, enough really. And one and it's not the other two. Your illustration is eye consciousness apprehending blue, yeah. So your illustration actually illustrates an illustration showing that all three appearances are there, no?
So it's the wrong illustration.
So, because your illustration is basically saying that if it is dualistic appearance, it's necessarily all three appearances, right? So you, based on your illustration, we say it follows that if it is dualistic appearances, it has to be all three appearances, isn't it? That you have no choice but to say yes, right? Yes. Then the thesis is defeated already, right? Yeah, if we are unable to posit an illustration, then the...
You're trying?
Good luck.
Yeah, just guessing. Me apprehending herself.
Yeah.
Ken? So there's no subject, object, right? It's just me.
Concept.
And myself.
Consciousness, the thought apprehending I. Thought of I.
Thought apprehending I.
Okay, nothing else to say.
Huh? I haven't finished. Wait, wait. You have to say.
I don't know how to answer your question.
What? One is 1093.
What is absent of the three appearances? What is absent from this illustration?
Subject, object, external object. I'm not very sure about the subject object, but definitely no external object. So, yeah. I can go back.
Yeah, if you're nervous, then go back.
Yeah, the self is very nervous.
Why is there no external appearance? Why isn't there an appearance of external object in this illustration? Why isn't there an appearance of external object for the thought apprehending I?
She gave the example of apprehending I. That thought doesn't have a appearance of external object. She said that, but why? You agree with that? Yeah, somebody come better example. Yeah, someone. Yeah, come, we have a...
No, no, just try. It's okay, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, Chalvin, come.
Mental consciousness apprehending brew as brew. So this is an illustration of a dualistic appearance whereby it's not an external object.
What?
Mental consciousness apprehending brew as brew.
What mental consciousness? Conceptual? Mental direct perceiver?
Let's say mental direct perceiver. Apprehending brew as gross object, gross form brew. Yeah.
What is missing of the three appearances? What is missing in this?
You do not apprehend it as an external brew.
Reason?
Because the brew is just a vivid brew, you know, that appear to the mental consciousness, not an external brew.
Why isn't there an appearance of external blue to this mental direct perceiver apprehending blue?
Need not be, right? Need not be a apprehension of external blue, right? And especially for the true expectorian, they assert that such a brew exists.
Why isn't there the appearance of external blue to the mental direct perceiver apprehending blue?
Because the mental direct perceiver don't see an external. It's just an appearance to the consciousness, yeah.
Why? You see blue, isn't it?
Yes, you see blue. Okay.
So why it doesn't see the external blue?
Because it's only an appearance object of the consciousness.
So isn't there a consciousness to which external blue appears to?
Not necessary yet.
It follows that there is no consciousness to which external blue appears to.
You're saying something like that, yeah?
No, but to this particular consciousness, it could happen that it does not see as external blue, right?
Why? Yeah, why? Why doesn't external blue appear to the mental direct perceiver of brand new blue?
Because the blue does exist, you know, to a true expectorant, you know, in the mind only school.
You must understand what you're saying, yeah. Mumbu Chubares. Mumbu Shitubares, the Mumbu Chirudum Nangamaras. Anyone's in Michelle, Mumbu Chirudum Nangamaras.
So you're saying that basically, as long as it is blue, it does not appear as an, it will not appear as a, it will not appear as an external object to any consciousness.
No, I'm not saying that.
So because when blue appear, it could appear as a gross form blue, vivid form blue. It could appear as an external blue. So what I'm saying is that this mental consciousness apprehending blue as blue is an illustration of an apprehension of this blue that is not an external blue. Yeah. So and this is an illustration of a dualistic appearance.
So you're saying that there are times, there's a possibility that
yes,
blue,
that you can apprehend blue
will
blue
not blue. Appear as an external object suddenly for whatever reason.
Okay, let's say I say that. For mental consciousness, that's what I'm saying.
Mental direct perceiver apprehending blue is a valid cognizer or not?
Isn't it an AAA?
Mental direct perceiver apprehending blue in the continuum of an ordinary being. Isn't it an AAA? An awareness to which an object appears but is not ascertained. It is right.
Bye-bye. Now enough.
Okay, we started with the Middle Way School, yeah, isn't it? So you know that there are two divisions of the Middle Way, yeah? The autonomous and the consequentialist, yeah. So the autonomous and the consequentialist both are proponents of the Middle Way, in that both do not assert true existence, even conventionally, isn't it? So both are the same in not asserting true existence, even conventionally. But there must be a difference between the two, isn't it? So in short, I've talked about this already, but in short, an autonomist is a proponent in the middle way who asserts existence by way of his own character, whereas the consequentialist do not assert existence by way of his own character. Yeah. In short, that's the difference, right? Okay, both the autonomists and consequentialists are proponents in the middle way, which means both refute true existence, even conventionally, isn't it? Correct. But yet there's a difference between the two of them, isn't it? One asserts existence by way of his own character, one does not assert existence by ways of his own character. So therefore, in order to know what is a proponent in the middle way, and in order to know the difference between the two proponents of the middle way, one must know what is true existence, and one must know what is the meaning of existence by way of his own character, without which just saying that there's a difference between those two is nothing. Yeah. So what is establishment by way of his own character? So establishment by way of his own character means that when the imputed object when sought is findable. So when the imputed object when sought, when sought is findable, then it shows that there is establishment by way of his own character. If the imputed object when sought is not findable, then it shows that there isn't establishment by way of his own character. So the middle way autonomists, they assert, they believe that, you know, that objects, you know, exist from their own side, in that when you point your finger at it, there is something at the end of the day that you can call that as the object. That's what you're looking for, you know. And so there's appearance of such object. And this appearance is coming from the side of the object. And the autonomists have said that that is how things and events are in reality. When you look for them, when you look for the imputed object, you know, you'll be able to find it. You'll be able to find it. You can definitely point to, oh, there it is, you know. So for the middle way autonomous, and for basically everybody below it, they believe that, you know, basically they believe that things exist from their own side, you know, that when the imputed object, when sought, is findable. So everything is like that, which includes the I, the self, the person. Yeah. So the I, the self, the person, when you look for it, you build the point to something that it is the person, right? Isn't it? So, according to the middle way autonomies, the illustration of a person would be the mental consciousness. You build, if you look, they believe that if you look for it, you'll be able to find it. There must be something you can point to. So therefore, the person can be found, you see. So they think about it, end of the day, it's not this, it's not that, but it has to be the mind. And within the mind, it has to be the mental consciousness. It has to be not just consciousness, but the mental consciousness. And quite many other tenets as well also assert that the mental consciousness is the person, basically. So, they do think about it, because they have to account for how a person moves from life to life, isn't it? There must be something that moves from life to life, isn't it? So, and yet the person is findable, isn't it? So they think about it, Then at the end of the day, they conclude that, it must be, the person must be the mental consciousness, the mental consciousness, yeah. Yeah, so it's stated very clearly in one of the writings of the great master Baba Viveka, who is the trailblazer of the middle way autonomies. Yeah. So he said clearly in one of his writings that that the mental consciousness is the I, the self. Bear in mind that we are now talking about the assertions of the middle way autonomies. This is what they say. That the mental consciousness is the I. But of course, at the end of the day, the actual reality of things is that the mental consciousness is not the I. The I is not the mental consciousness in reality. Especially, if you look at it from the ultimate, the highest tenet, the viewpoint of the consequence middle way school. It's wrong to posit the mental consciousness to be the illustration of I, But this is the middle way autonomy's view, yeah. Because it boils down to their fundamental assertion that things exist by way of his own character, and therefore you must be able to point to something that is the phenomenon in question, is it? So if you have to point to something, if you believe that the phenomenon can be pointed out, can be found when sought after, then, with regards to the I, then the only way, you think about it, there's nothing much you can, point to that you can say is the I, right? That other than the mental consciousness, yeah. Yeah, so, for those people who think that, the I can be pointed out, then if you think, probably the most, the best illustration, the best example, and the finest example would be the mental consciousness. Of course, it is an extremely difficult task to realize what exactly is the I or the self of the person. Yeah, extremely, extremely difficult task. Yeah, because of course, there's an I that wants to be happy and I that doesn't want to suffer, isn't it? But exactly what on earth is this I or the self? Yeah, this is a huge question. Yeah, big question. And then this is the main object of inquiry of all the Buddhist texts. Everybody is trying to explain, to find out what exactly is this art of personal? Right? And all the tenets have their own explanations, isn't it? So, because of we don't really understand what on earth, you know, what exactly is the eye on the person, you know. Because of that, you know, all the problems come. Every single problem and difficulty and hardship, everything comes from that, is it? So, but when there is a proper understanding of what exactly is the eye of the person, then you know these problems, you know, will go away. The middle way autonomists do not assert true existence, isn't it? Right? Because they are proponents of the middle way. Therefore, they don't assert true existence, yeah. But what exactly is true existence? And you remember the previous lesson. There was this quotation from the Descent of the Lanka Sutra, yeah, with that as the source. No? So the middle way autonomists, basically, they state that something exists because it appears to a mind. Therefore, it can be posited to exist. Without it appearing, you know, it cannot be posited as an existent, right? So, for the middle way autonomous, you know, based on that quotation, quotation from the Descent of the Lanka Sutra, therefore, they state that something is an existent because it appears to an awareness, isn't it? Yeah. That's why it exists, yeah. So if that's the meaning of existence, yeah, for them. So the opposite of that would be true existence. And what would be true existence? If there is something that can exist without appearing, then that would make that object truly existent. Okay. So in order for something to be an existent, it has to appear to a mind, to an awareness, yeah. Okay? Right? This is the middle way autonomous view. And in explaining this, they explain that anything that exists has to be posited through it appearing to an awareness, and not just any awareness. It has to appear to a non-defective awareness, isn't it?
That
Okay, so according to the middle way autonomous, if it is an existent, now what determines whether something exists or not? If it is posited through the force of appearing to a non-defective awareness, then it is said to be an existent. Yeah. So it has to appear to a non-defective awareness, isn't it? So what is the meaning of non-defective awareness here? A non-defective awareness is an awareness, a mind that is not affected by adventitious causes of error. I think this was covered in the previous module. Yeah. Adventitious or temporary kind of causes of error. Yeah. And it is non-defective in the sense of not being mistaken with things appearing as existing by way of its own character. So this is what a non-defective awareness means, yeah. It has to be, what are the features, yeah. So therefore, in short, according to the middle way autonomous, if it is an existent, it has to be posited through the force of appearing to a non-defective awareness. So, according to the middle way autonomous, true existence means establishment by way of its own uncommon mode of existence without being posited through the force of appearing to a non-defective awareness. It's all in the chart, you know? Right? You say, right? In the chart that was given out right in the beginning of the module. And also in the last lesson, we saw how the middle way autonomies are divided into two. Yeah. There are the sutra middle way autonomies and the yogic middle way autonomies. Yeah. And then as for the yogic middle way autonomies, basically they are proponents of middle way autonomies who have views that also which also conform a lot with the mind only school's tenets. Yeah. So the yogic middle way autonomies do not assert external objects. They like the mind only school. They assert self knowers also. Yeah, so the proponent of the middle way who do not assert external objects and who asserts self-knowers are yogic middle way autonomous.
Mm.
So, in illustration of a proponent of the yogic middle way autonomous would be the great master Shantarakshita. He was a great Indian master who was invited to Tibet, I think around in the 7th or 8th century. And he was invited into Tibet during the reign of King Trisong Desen, at the time when they were building the first monastery, Samye Monastery. And he was this great Indian master who introduced the lineage of the ordination into Tibet. Yeah. Yeah, so said that this great master Shantarakshita was like the architect, or you know, who came up with the design or the plan or the layout of Samye Monastery.
What in the scene? Tinamata, Toshi, Tinamata, the Jiju Marakubas. Mati, a total casino. That about the devil to Tadang, and it's too much in him, Mang Jetta, too much in it, the shaking.
Then, as for the Sutra Middle Way Autonomies, Sutra Middle Way Autonomies assertions, a lot of which conform to also the Sutra School.
That is do Yangji Ote, that Aniji Rangi, Ani Pena Rangi, Kimilabas. Ani Yang Chidden Kedene, Rangi Kimilabas.
So the Sutra Middle Way Autonomies are proponents of the Middle Way who assert external objects but do not assert self-knowers. And in order to make that even clearer, you could say that the proponent of the middle way who asserts the external objects exist by way of their own character and who do not assert self-knowers are Sutra Middle Way Autonomies, or the Sautantrika, Swatantrika, Madhyamikas. So the trailblazer of the Sutra or the Sutra Middle Way Autonomy School is the great Indian master Baba Viveka, who was born in South India, and he became a monk and became a great scholar in Nalanda Monastery, and subsequently it was said that he established about 50. I just married, multiplied for him. I forgot that it's not Saturday. He established 50 over Sula Kang, you can say temples. And in doing so, he helped to spread the Buddha's teachings.
Yeah. ane chik sharab dumes. Tinde tsame, ane dikaba zozo da sangye kyangi, ane chik da jawatila ngakpa mambo chese. Da tundayin, da ranjuki chok tebares. Da tajuki chok tegemare, ranjuki chok tebares. Da dukse kwa mambo kone dubingwasi. Ranjuki tajuki tebe dukse mambo ji kone dubingwasi. Da ranjuki singe suche se gyunze dinare.
So this great master, Baba Viveka, wrote a commentary on Nagarjuna's fundamental wisdom. This is a famous text by Nagarjuna called Fundamental Wisdom. Literally, it's root wisdom, you know, but you know, fundamental wisdom. You know. He commented on it, you know. He basically wrote a commentary on this fundamental wisdom as a refutation of the Buddha Palita's commentary on the fundamental wisdom. So Buddha Palita was a prasangika view. Yeah? So Baba Viveka wrote a commentary on the Nagarjuna's fundamental wisdom refuting what Buddha Palita has commented on, and in so doing, he established the autonomy midway school's view, and he, from his side, said that the autonomy midway school's view is correct. The Prasangika's explanation is incorrect. So basically, his commentary was meant to show that what Nagarjuna's fundamental wisdom intention was to explain it, based on the autonomy middle way school's view, which is the correct one. So anyway, yeah. So the great master Baba Viveka is said to be the trailblazer of the autonomy school. So I also mentioned in the previous lesson that the definitions or the presentation for the two truths according to the middle way autonomies is the same or similar to the mind only schools. Yeah. So as for the autonomy school's way of asserting selflessness, the selflessness of person, their assertion of the selflessness of person is the same, yeah, as the tenets before it, yeah. Kibo. Then the yogic middle way autonomists assert that a form and a cognizer apprehending that form being empty of different substances is a cause selflessness of phenomena, and all phenomena being empty of true existence is asserted to be the subtle selflessness of phenomena. So the yogic autonomy middle way school divides the selflessness of phenomena into coarse and subtle. That's the thing that you have to note there.
Right.
So the yogic yogic autonomy middleway school distinguishes between coarse and subtle selflessness of persons, coarse and subtle selflessness of phenomena as well, isn't it? And the difference is not made on the basis of the basis of emptiness, but the difference is made on the object of negation. Okay. Having said that, you should be able to explain why, according to the autonomies, the difference between the two selflessness of phenomena is made on the basis of the object of negation and not on the basis of emptiness.
Somebody come quickly. Someone. And sorry, it's already there, yeah? Inside the text. I'm just wondering. Patricia.
Yeah, come.
What's the reason? Why? Huh? It's such a simple, yeah. So the shimmer. You got the question, yeah? Oi.
I think so. I think so, and I hope so.
First listen. You don't get to listen.
Because the object.
Wait.
What are the faults if the differences between the two selflessness of phenomena or between the two selflessness are made on the basis of the emptiness?
You got?
That wasn't a question, right?
No, that's a question now. Same. No difference. Same.
Can you say the question again?
You said you got the first question. Well, this is the second question. But it's exactly the same.
What are the faults again? If
what are the faults if the self sentences are differentiated or according to the basis of emptiness?
The question is same.
What is the fault again? I a lot. Huh? What is the fault again? A very slow one.
One more.
I try. I super slow.
Okay, I read from the text.
Okay.
The two selflessnesses are differentiated by way of the object of negation and not by the way of the basis of the emptiness.
Okay.
What are the faults if we say that the two selflessnesses are differentiated by way of the basis of emptiness?
Actually, the answer is already in the text. They already answered for you. I am here for you. The answer is already there.
Oh, okay. That means if you realize selflessness of person, right? You realize everything, ah? Okay, well.
What do you mean?
Something.
You realize everything. You realize what?
If you realize selflessness of person,
then you realize what?
All the selflessness, phenomena also, because the selflessness,
basis, something. I think something like that. That's the reason. If you realize selfness of person, you will also realize selfness of phenomena. That's the thought. Then you only have one selflessness. You don't have two. Then you cannot differentiate according to object of negation. Yeah, I think so. Oh, Buddha bless you.
When you don't get it right, then Buddha don't bless.
He also bless. I learn.
Okay, sit down. I didn't get you.
Okay. So anyway, the answer is quite straightforward. It's there in the text. Yeah. So sometimes one of the reasons why I ask certain questions is to see whether you read the text or not. Snakes, the presentation on the grounds and paths. According to the yogic middle way autonomous, the difference between the persons of the three vehicles are posited in terms of the three different obscurations that are the main objects of abandonment, and the three different views that are the main objects of meditation. And in order to clarify what has just been said, then you have the next three paragraphs explaining how the differences between the persons of the three vehicles are posited in terms of the three different obscurations. Right? Those of the hearer lineage, having taken the conception apprehending the person to be self-sufficient, substantially existent, together with its retinue as their main object of abandonment, through taking as the antidote to that, the view realizing the person to be empty of being self-sufficient, substantially existent as the main object of meditation, attain the small enlightenment. So the three vehicles are the hero vehicle, the solitary realizer's vehicle, and the bodhisattva vehicle, isn't it, right? So as for those of the hero's lineage, what is their main object of meditation? The main object of meditation is the emptiness of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. And the main object of abandonment of those of hero's lineage is the conception apprehending a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. And through meditating on the emptiness of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, in doing that, they abandon the conception apprehending a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. And through that, what do they achieve? They achieve a small enlightenment.
Yeah.
which is the hearer's enlightenment. Hearer's enlightenment.
Ta dine ma ta ta lanja ji rikshe nam ji ta kare gong ge lanja ji rikshe nam ji so dang so zin chama ze shin de zhu ba zin de to ba bang ji zo chen ti ni mo so zin ze shin dong de ta wo gong ji zo che ba le chang ji ding de ba che se.
Those of the solitary realizer lineage, having taken the conception apprehending the form and the valid cognizer apprehending the form to be different substances as their main object of abandonment, through taking as the antidote to that the view realizing apprehenders and apprehended to be empty or being different substances as their main object of meditation, attain the middling enlightenment. Middling
enlightenment.
So what is the main object of meditation of those of the solitary realizers lineage? The main object of meditation for those of the solitary realizers lineage is the emptiness of object and subject as being different substances. And the main object of abandonment of those of the solitary realizers lineage is the conception apprehending form and the valid cognizer apprehending that form to be of different substances. Yeah. And so through meditating on the emptiness, they abandon this object of abandonment. And what do they achieve? They achieve a middling enlightenment, which is, in this case, the solitary realizers enlightenment. Yeah. Bodhisattvas, having taken the conception of true existence together with its latencies as their main object of abandonment, through taking as the antidote to that the view realizing all phenomena to be lacking true existence as their main object of meditation, then attain the great enlightenment.
那都都,他都是你叫他,他講是那麼一,他講就做卡了是呢,他
the main object of meditation of the Bodhisattvas is the emptiness of true existence. The main object of abandonment of the Bodhisattvas is its conception of true existence, and the result that they achieve, yeah, is the great enlightenment, which is full enlightenment. So this is the explanation of the Yogacara Swatantrika, the yogic middle way autonomous explanation. Yeah. So according to the yogic middle way autonomous, they assert that the persons of the three, that there are differences between the persons of the three vehicles, and the differences are posited in terms of them having different obscurations. They are the main object of abandonment, and in therefore, then there is a difference in their main object of meditation.
Yeah.
The Sutra Middle Way Autonomous has a different take on this. Yeah. According to the Sutra Middle Way Autonomous, there is no difference between the hearers and solitary realizers regarding their main object of abandonment and main object of meditation. Why? Because they are similar in taking the afflictive obscurations as their main objects of abandonment, and they are also similar in taking the selflessness of persons as their main object of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So the sutra way middle sutra way. It's easier to say in Sanskrit, but anyway, the sutra middle way autonomies are similar to the sutra school in that they assert external objects, isn't it? And because they assert external objects, they don't talk about the emptiness of objects and subjects as being different substances, isn't it?
다 건조다 닌도 니가 다 건조 쏘체 가다 가서 있다면 건조체 방자 민디 봉지 쏘체 어디는 차지 그야 됐어 이나야 다 닌도기 닌도기 창주 세다 난제 창주라 개발 요마를 했으니 초월에 나디 나 개발 요마를 또 손은 쏘 아니 치중 차네 아니 제고다 개발 용구리 쓰시다 렌도 자실시
Assert that the main object of meditation of both the hearers and the solitary realizers is the selflessness of person, isn't it? Yeah. And the main object of abandonment for both the hearers and solitary realizers are the afflictive obscurations. This is according to the Sutra Middleway Autonomies. But having said that, if we ask a question, then according to the Sutra Middleway Autonomies, is there a difference then between the hearers and solitary realizers? The answer is yes, there is a difference. And the difference comes in terms of the amount of merit that the hearers and solitary realizers accumulate. Yeah. Okay, so the Buddha's words are classified, or it can be divided into the Hinayana Sutras and the Mahayana Sutras here. Still got people use pager. I didn't know it's an existent. Okay, so how are the Hinayana Sutras and the Mahayana Sutras differentiated? Yeah.
That's the question. Huh? Anybody have answer?
So, there are the three turnings of the wheel of Dharma. Yeah. So, the sutras of the first turning of the wheel of Dharma are Hinayana Sutras and uncommon Hinayana Sutras. Yeah. The second turning of the wheel of Dharma consists of the Mahayana Sutras and the Mahayana Uncommon Sutras. Yeah. And the third turning of the wheel of Dharma is said to be contain the sutras that are common or shared with both the Hinayana and Mahayana.
What do you mean?
당보된 담화로 당돈을 내주집에 오면 열어봐.
그 당보당 담았니? 아니 당돈이 또 있어.
According to the yogic middle way autonomies, the sutras of the first turning of the wheel and dharma and the third turning of the wheel of dharma are sutras of interpretive meaning.
어떻게 되네? 콜로 파바 수도가나 다 당연히 전이었어. 당대인이여, 니대인, 니가 이거래서 독신이 송해.
And the sutras of the second turning of the wheel of Dharma consists of both sutras of interpretive meaning and sutras of definitive meaning.
어떻게 되네? 천시 샤이 뭐가나? 그러면 샤라님부터 어디 따라한지 내지원한지 로시 샤라님부터 어디 아니 고로 봐봐라 이나 당도부터 됐어요. 오마라지베 샤라님부터
봐봐라
고로 봐봐라 아니 당도부터 됐어요.
So according to the autonomies, the heart of the perfection of wisdom sutra, the one that you know that we recite commonly, you know, all the time, according to the middle way autonomies, it is a sutra belonging to the second turning of the wheel of Dharma, and it is a sutra of interpretive meaning. And the short, middling, and an extensive perfection of wisdom sutras are sutras of the second turning of the wheel of Dharma and are sutras of definitive meaning. So according to the autonomies, the heart of the perfection of wisdom sutra. Yeah, that is the way to say that. We always say heart sutra, right? Heart sutra. Somehow the wisdom is disappears. Yeah. So it's actually the heart of the perfection of wisdom sutra. So according to the autonomies, it is a sutra of the second turning wheel of Dharma, yes. But it is a sutra of interpretive meaning, not a sutra of definitive meaning. Why? Because according to the autonomies, the heart or the perfection of wisdom sutra cannot be taken literally. If you take it literally, there will be many problems according to them. Why is it that the autonomies do not accept that the heart of the perfection of wisdom sutra is a sutra of definitive meaning? Why is it that you cannot, according to them, the heart of the perfection of wisdom sutra cannot, it's not suitable to be taken literally or not suitable to be read literally? So why according to the autonomous, the heart of the perfection of wisdom sutra cannot be taken, it's not suitable to be read or taken literally. Because in the heart of the perfection of wisdom sutra, it says clearly that you know, things and phenomena are empty of inherent existence, isn't it? But the middle way autonomies assert that things and events exist inherently, isn't it? Tewo. According to them, right?
Tarashing, Tongban number Tao Sena, and Tasum Chalam, the Rumumitoma, Tarangi.
right? So the middle way autonomists assert that if it exists, it necessarily exists inherently. So if you then take the Heart of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra literally, you have to accept that things do not exist inherently, isn't it? Because it's said in the Heart of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, right? Tio. The autonomists do accept that the short, middling, and the extensive perfection of wisdom sutras are sutras of definitive meaning. Why? Because in those sutras, the qualification ultimately is added. So whenever things are said to be empty of existing inherently, the qualification ultimately is added, you see. Ultimately, things are not inherently existent. Okay, so in the text, in this context, the first and the third turning in the wheels of Dharma are sutras of interpretive meaning, while the middle turning of the wheel of Dharma has both parts, interpretive and definitive, because those in which the qualification of ultimately is applied to the object of negation are asserted to be sutras of definitive meaning, while those of the middle turning of the wheel in which it is not applied are asserted to be sutras of interpretive meaning.
Okay, I think that's all.
That's all for the autonomy midway school. So we will finish the consequence of midway in the next couple of lessons. So there's nothing much about the consequence school, yeah, in the root text, yeah.
1, 2, 3. I didn't see it. I thought I already answered that much. No?
So your question was basically about the sutra autonomy, sutra midway autonomies, right? About whether the sutra midway autonomies assert partless particles or not. So the answer is pretty short. The Sutra Middle Way Autonomies assert partless particles, but they do not assert directionally partless particles. Yeah. So according to the proponents on Middle Way, if it is in existence, it necessarily possesses parts. That's why the partless particles do possess parts. Yeah. They assert partless particles, right? They don't assert directionally partless particles. For the proponent in the Middle Way, anything that exists necessarily possesses parts. So that would make the partless particles have parts, right? Yeah, how to say chame? It's not partless. Partless particles. Partless particles are not partless because they possess parts.
Okay.
That's the thing.
So that's the sentence. Fully stop. Huh? Okay. And you think about what I'm talking.
The smallest.
Huh? Okay.
Not Southeast Asia.
Okay, we stop here. Student. Yeah. So next one, go to the higher school. Huh? Everybody belong to that. So easy. So.
So the exam is on the 23rd of June, I believe it's a Sunday. Yeah, it's the 23rd of June, Sunday. Perhaps we can do it at 10:30 a.m. 10:30 a.m. On 23rd of June.
10:30. Okay.
The last class for tenets would be the 13th of June. And the week following that is empty, no classes, empty of classes.
Empty of classes, full of knowledge. That's the meaning of exam is that, huh? No exam, no knowledge. Exam is. I mean, there will be some stress. Yeah, but it's okay. Huh? There will be stress, but it's okay. Huh? So you can learn more. Yeah. Okay, I think we're clear, yeah? Yeah,
okay. Finish off with the usual prayers.